Blog Talk Radio.
Zambia Block Talk Radio. My name is Roger Chali here in Okotok, Sabeta, Canada. It is nice and sunny. It's been good. So far, the beginning of summer has been very, very good. Dr. Musanje, good morning.
Good morning, Roger.
How are you?
Okay. I was just disappointed that Zambia lost to Japan.
How did they lose? They seem to be in control.
Yeah, they were in control, but I think in the last minutes they fell apart.
Yes. Okay, so I think we give them. It seems we give Japan a good run anyway. Zambia may not be going to the World Cup, but we've given them something to think about.
Mm.
Yeah. And NBA, who are you rooting for now that all your teams are out?
Now I'm just trying to enjoy the game because I got frustrated when OKC lost.
Yes. No,
yeah.
That one I think I'm back to LeBron James, and I hope those people, they will not think that beating Miami in those conditions, it will be the same. I think they're still going to lose.
Yeah, I'm leaning towards LeBron James because the man really fights. He's
oh,
a
yeah.
fighter. I think that is something that we cannot take away from him.
You see, that's what I was saying with my son. How OKC is a good team, they can win. But the one individual they may need at a time when, you know, who needs to elevate the game at another level, they don't have that individual. What is his name? They are superstar, the MVP. He wants to play at the same level. Like,
yeah.
He's playing what? Like a regular season, you know? Like a regular
KD.
Season.
Yeah, KD cannot compare himself to LeBron.
No.
See, when the boy is on the line, LeBron fights to make sure that they win.
He takes it to a different level. He takes it to a different level. Yeah. Okay, that is good. So we'll wait to hear from what others are, if they may have to, when they join us. But this morning, Dr. Musanje, I wanted to just look at, I invited Dr. Patrick, but it was late when I sent him email. If he calls us, he'll find us. How much, Dr. Patrick, Dr. Musanje, maybe let's look at the papers, what is in the papers back home. That will be our start. They're reporting in Zambia Weekly, Dr. Musanje, that this is the issue from the Balose refuses to give up. Government has deployed, I like this, Dr. Musanje, I'm sure you are going to like it too. Government has deployed 100 police officers to Mongu following rumors of imminent uprising. Home Affairs Ministry spokesman Moses Suwali told the Post. And then they go on and on to explain. Maybe I can read the whole thing. It's not that long. Last year, 84 people were arrested for treason following an attempt to establish a new state called Royal Establishment Kingdom. The 84 were later released or now prosecuted. Unrest has simmered in Western Province since the police broke up a secessionist meeting in Mongo in 2011, igniting riots that left two people dead. Swali explained that the officers had been deployed as the deadline of 29th May came and went without President Sata signing a permanent Court of Arbitration submission agreement, which would have sent the Balose impasse to arbitration tribunal in the Netherlands. Dr. Musanje, I guess my question is, do you think the Balose problem can be sorted out by the police?
No, I think that it is a political problem which should be negotiated upon. And let me just go back to the issues in Nigeria of Boko Haram.
Boko Haram.
I think what happened in Nigeria can be a lesson, as that can also happen in Western Province. You see, Western Province in Zambia is one of those provinces that has been
neglected,
declared redundant. It is not developing. All the money you get from our copper, it goes to Lusaka. You know, so the people in Western Province, they are frustrated. It is not that they want to move out of Zambia. No. I think they are Zambians. They know that they are Zambians. I don't know. That is just my thought. So I think it is going to be. It will take some form of development. You know, let us give them part of the copper money to develop Northwestern Province, to put secondary schools there, put hospitals, put whatever public amenities can be done. And that, unfortunately, the power lies in the presidents. In Zambia, we have made the power where the president can make all those decisions. The way he's doing in Muchinga province, you see, they are going to build a water company in Muchinga province. The same thing he can do in his president. He should not just doing it in his homeland, or appointing people from his homeland to South Korea and Malawi. There are so many Zambians who are capable from all tribes, all the 73 tribes.
Yeah. That, well said on that one. King Cobra was, I think, one of the most respected, sophisticated, in my view, politicians. We thought, anyway. But he may just prove to be one of the worst presidents Zambia ever had. It's shameful. But going back to the Barossa issue, which I really agree with you, and you know, I've come now to appreciate the Barossa fight. One of the things President Sata told the Barossa people was, once I'm president, I'm going to give you the right for you to agree to some of the terms they are asking for. And we see him become president like any other person. They change, what about if every province wanted to be the way the Barossa is? Yes, and I agree, Dr. Musanje. Every province should be like the Barossa thing. They should be a point where every province should look at the determining of their own destiny. How many schools do we need in this province? How many roads do we need in this province? How many electrical zescos do we need in this province? Not this idea of having a one zesco which controls the whole country. And if you have this, the government, like the MMD, using up the money in zesco, then the institution is dead, and therefore the whole country is dead, you know. So the Barossa issue, I'm not sure, Dr. Musanje, and I agree with you. It is one, the PF will control using their well-founded tricks nowadays of, you know, using the police in this way. I don't think it will take them anywhere. To those who listen online, we think this is not a police problem or a military problem. You may just turn it to one if you don't handle it a property. You may just turn the balose a problem to be a police or a military win, which you at the end of the day, government, you are not going to win. Why? Because the people in the area believe in this fight of the balose. They sympathize with the balose rather than they will sympathize with the PF, the police, or everyone else. So give the people what they want. Let's sit at the table. We may not even need Dr. Musanje to go to arbitration in Netherlands, but just sit. This is what we can give you. This is what we cannot give you. Give or take. That way we can rally the entire country to a common cause. We can rally. Even the good thinking people of Balosa would say, I think this is a good bargain. Let's take it. And I would want to say, Dr. Musanje, that bargain should also extend to other areas. Like you have said, President Sata is doing a lot of things in Mchinga. We want to see that whatever he's doing in Mchinga happen in Northwestern Province, where the money is coming from to begin with.
Mm.
Happen to Southern Province, happen to Central Province, it's happened to Eastern Province. Let the people begin to decide on these things, Dr. Musanje. I think, I don't know if you want to add on anything on that one before we go to the next one.
No.
Okay, good. There is a quote, Dr. Musanje, here I found very, I didn't write a comment besides it, but I hope I'll remember. This is a quote from the minister, Dr. Musanje, of Health. He says, I'm tired of always announcing results that indicate missionary schools, private and community schools perform better than government schools. This is just a comment. Is it Mr. or Dr. John P. Was saying about the education system. Now I remember what I wanted to say about this. I don't know what you think about this quote, Dr. Musanje. I'll read it again. I'm tired of always announcing results that indicate missionary schools, private and community schools perform better than government schools. What do you take of that?
I think that is a statement which the minister made sincerely. He's tired of announcing that government schools are not doing better than missionary schools and the private thing. I think that is true. The resources in the government schools are not there. You know, just to take one school, the library, there are no books for the students to read.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yes.
There are no sports facilities to occupy the children so that they do not engage in criminal activities. You know? So I think he was just very sincere. I don't read what I have just heard what you said, and I thought it was a very sincere thing. But how, I think the way we should look at it, how can we improve these government schools to perform at the same level with the private schools so that children in the private schools and missionary schools will not be treated differently?
Okay, those who are listening, you are listening to Zambia Block Talk Radio. At this hour, usually at Tomboka Pirikisha of Germany is on this hour, but she has a bereavement back home. The grandmother passed on yesterday, I think, and we passed our condolences to Twambo. She's a great woman of this organization and of this Rainbow. Twambo, please be strong as you go through this difficult time. I join you, Dr. Musanje, on this statement. But what I said to myself was, the minister, you are tired of saying this. So who are you tired with? Is it the teachers or is it the parents? Why are you tired? He didn't say what next. It's just the court. But I agree exactly, Dr. Musanje, from what you have also quoted. It is a sincere statement that he is tired. But I'm sure...
I don't know whether you read about the students in Mulungusi University boycotted the classes and doing a lot of things because of increase in the tuition and things like that. I wrote something in one of the maybe Lusaka Times where it was reported. I responded about... I'll confess what I wrote. I wrote that sometimes we do not need to reinvent the wheel in order for us to do things better. Why can't we just take the American system? You see, I like the way the American system of education is done. There are batteries, there are federal grants. There are so many ways. The students... they are the ones who are working, for example, in the cafeteria to provide the lunch for other students. If they need the money, they will be working. I remember when I was at youth, we never worked. There were people employed there, and we just went there and ate.
I know.
After coming out of Zambia, I found that is stupid. The students themselves should have been even cooking the meals to make money for themselves. You see, if you are a poor student, you go and do whatever you are required to do to pay for your tuition. I give an example of myself. I worked all my life in college here in America. I was a student. But I worked part-time every week. I had to meet 20 hours of work, I think, every week. And on top of that, they even gave me a stupid stipend of like $350, which for me, I thought was okay. You know, and I completed my education, and we never even rioted at the university. And when students in Zambian universities, they keep on rioting. You know, they don't understand that the education is it's costly. But at the same time, they are right to demonstrate against a government that has no policies. Like somebody said, no plan.
Yes. Chimbino plan.
Yes.
You know what Chimbu is?
Yes. Oh, yeah. It's Suntwe. In my language, it's Suntwe.
Suntwe. Suntwe no plan.
Yes. Chimbu no.
Yes. So, again, maybe not going to the Balose issue that much, Dr. Musanje, but I feel... the issue, this is one of those things which central government has failed to deliver. Because you tell me that the same minister should monitor what is happening in Shangombo schools. And the same minister should know what is happening in Lufumba. Lufupa, that is a small, tiny village in Kasemba. He has never even heard of that place.
He has never heard.
He's
eating in Lusaka.
And then later on we want him to fix a school in Lufupa. Or some small town in Cherenge. You know, some small village in Cherenge. So these are some of the things. Let the people who are affected by these problems have a say, you know. Maybe they'll contribute, they'll cook some munkoyo to sell so that they can buy books. Maybe they'll contribute some kind of mad, nice painting for the classroom. Maybe they contribute the time to make some kind of wooden desks for their children. But people need to be freed to understand that they are able to do some of these things on their own. People need to be free, Dr. Musanje. It is not enough just for the minister to say, I'm disappointed. Mr. Minister, you are not disappointed. You as a department can begin tomorrow, Mr. Minister, to say the people in Wapra province, the people in Mansa, the people in Kawambwa, I'm giving you free rein. Improve your own education, whatever is needed. If there is need for partnership with government, if there is somewhere we can partner, yes, come. But I want you to start to have there is no way a town in Zambia should never have a library. Every town should have a library. But it is up to you, the people of Katete, to do to implement this. Every we have thousands and thousands, Dr. Musanje, of Zambians who are represented. I think every district in Zambia is represented in the diaspora, and they can find the book for those children. Yes. So Dr. Musanje and I are on fire this morning. This is Under Block Talk Radio. We're just looking at some of the comments. Road transport, Dr. Musanje, safety. This is your thing here. They are introducing procuring 10 speed cameras. I thought it was a joke. 10 speed cameras to be placed in highways, reported the Daily Mail. Dr. Musanje, 10 speed.
what do you mean by 10? Those 10, most likely they will be in Lusaka.
And people are dying everywhere in the country. Okay, we won't say anything. We won't say anything. One disturbing story which is coming online, on and on, Dr. Musanje, is the issue of the PF and the police, the way they are attacking the radio stations. There is a story here, police storm radio station in Isoka. Police have apparently stormed Isoka FM radio, a community radio station in Isoka, for featuring opposition UPND chair lady Mutalena Lumango, reported the Zambia Watchdog. The staff members were detained, including news editor Peter Sichali, journalist Jenny Namkoko, and technician Matthews Mwandila. We've seen this happen, Dr. Musanje, in Kasempa. This gentleman, I don't know if they detained him or he was on leave. They were looking for him, the station manager. I know him well, a lousy brother of mine. We have seen the police, the Hot FM in Lusaka, where they are trying to have this one closed as well. We've seen the same problems with the radio station in Kasama. How would any president, how would Mr. Sata, if Mr. Sata was to die, want to be remembered, Dr. Musanje? Is this a way he would want to be remembered?
I think that the president, yes, is the one in charge of everything that has happened. But sometimes I think he's more controlled by his stooges who fear. For example, when that story came, I made a comment somewhere to say that Zambia was celebrating Africa Freedom Day, I think on the 25th of May. Yeah, but what kind of freedom are we celebrating?
If
we don't have freedom
good
of
point,
expression,
good point.
A freedom of making speeches, freedom of assembly, Those are the rights which are in the United Nations, human rights, rights that should be observed by every country. Now, what happens is when you take them away and you start closing people's avenues of talking,
expressing themselves,
like yes. If they take away the forum where we are now talking, Zambia Block Talk Radio, you know, it is going to affect some of the things that we are discussing here. They affect real people who benefit. Most of the time, people don't have anything against speeches. So I'm surprised that Mr. Saka, who has come from the opposition, has just started to implement the Public Order Act. If I was him, I was going to abolish that Public Order Act, not to allow the police to be very civil in handling cases and mostly criminal cases. And obviously, terrorism can be part of top of situation for the police. But the police should not be used to intimidate ordinary Zambians.
Well said, Dr. Musanje. Zambia is going to be attaining 50 years of independence. And I guess the question we should be asking this year, independence from what?
Yes.
If it is just independence from a white man, maybe we missed the mark. Excuse me, we are talking about today, Dr. Musanje, how the children in rural Zambia are unable to go to school. They are not attending school. Grade 4, they drop out. This is 50 years, Dr. Musanje, after Zambia attained its independence. 50 years, we have failed to realize that there is no way a child who is just 12 years old should be dropped away from school, and just at grade 7 that we have failed. That is a failure. And you talk about independence to that child who is just roaming in the streets of Kitwe, the streets of Lusaka. What is this independence we are talking about? And now we have this issue where local stations cannot talk about the issues which affect them, where local stations are intimidated because the opposition has been allowed to come into. What kind of independence are we talking about? And now we are even bringing the Chinese to come and design. After 50 years of independence, Zambia cannot figure out how to celebrate the 50 years. They would rather go and call the Chinese, spend money on the Chinese to come and figure out for us how to celebrate our own 50 years of independence. I think this morning what we are saying, Dr. Musanje, it is a joke to say at 50, have gone forward. We have gone forward from our colonial masters. Rather, I think we are going back into bondage, Mr. President, President Sata. We are going back into bondage in our own country. Our own country, we are being intimidated not to say what is in our mind. And history, Mr. Sata, will not judge you kindly in the way you've handled your affairs of Zambia. One thing is, Zambia will never be turned into a Zimbabwe. That I can promise the president. You will never go back. The freedoms which were given to us, small freedoms which were given to us by the MMD, Chiluba, may he rest in peace. Let the people speak. We shall never stop speaking for our dear motherland. I think that is one thing. The message we can send to them. Stop intimidating the small radios. This is the information. The entire world is listening this morning. Everyone is listening. You are intimidating small radios in rural Zambia. People will never be silenced in Zambia. It will never happen. They may be silenced for 1 or 2 days, but trust me, it doesn't mean that people are silent. People are still speaking up. Okay. again, talking about the health of the president here, someone says, don't talk about such as health. Michael Muzondoa, a businessman of Kabata Market in Lusaka, has been charged with publication of false news with intent to cause fear and alarm after he spread rumors about President Sata's health. You never know if with this police, Dr. Musanje, they have even work to do or they are just working for PF. I don't know. You know, it is one of the other things you also talked about, Dr. Musanje, CBU students, they boycott classes. It is another problem. Now, we have built this culture of dependency. I don't know if it's a culture of dependency, but it's a culture of dependency, or it's a culture which we tell our students, you don't need to think about anything. Government is going to think for you, we'll do everything. But we have reached a situation at Copperbelt University, Dr. Musanje, where there are no classes. The desk, you might think you are at a primary school. So the students there, they boycotted classes for about 2 days. And the minister, I think the permanent secretary, addressed them. I thought I liked the way he had handled it. But all in all, we need the students need some form of independence. From Yunza to Mulungushi to Copperbelt University, we need to begin to transition from this one-party UNIPI way of providing for the students to being self-reliant. To being self-reliant. This is the only thing which will save our institutions. Money from wherever, I think this money or borrowed money is not going to help the students. We need to find ways of financing our education system rather than what is happening today. You'd be interested, Dr. Musanje, that HH just turned 52 years old, and in June 4th, yes, that was HH. President Nevers Mumba turned 54 last month in May. He turned 54 years old. I'm thinking this is the right age of people who should be in power or who should be in presidency.
It will require to change our constitution that the presidential age should be from 35 to 60 or something like that.
Yeah. But you know what, Dr. Musanje? I don't think that is the right approach. We the people, we cannot rely on the constitution every day. We the people are the ones who should say, you are too old, you are not standing, you are not standing, or we are not going to vote for you. Because we might miss out on someone who is 70 or 80 years old, who is brilliant. We might miss out. But if someone is 70 and is not even making any sense, we should say, President Sata is between 72 and 78 years old, depending on the report you are reading.
Yes.
So, I thought that was funny. It's between 72 and 78 years. 78. We are not sure if the president himself knows the age or he doesn't know his age when he was born. We should be better than this. But KK being a teacher, I think it is well documented when he was born, so we are able to follow it. Do you, Dr. Musanje, know the exact date of President Sata?
No, because the last time when he declared to stand as president of Zambia, I think he said he was 71. So now, after 3 or 4 years since that time, he's still saying he's 72. I mean, I don't think it's okay for an African not to know when they were born. After all, There were no records at that time, so he can just declare one day. And he has to keep that date. He has to remember that date, too.
Yes, yes, remember that day. Guy Scott also is 70 years old. He was born on 1st June 1944. That is funny. Dr. Patrick has not come in. I wanted us to look at the life of Maya Angelou and some of the things Maya Angelou had to say. But we'll continue. At the last, maybe we may look at one or two quotes, Dr. Musanje. I found very interesting or very intriguing what Maya Angelou had to say about life. There is a story in Tuombo, Dr. Musanje, that there are lions there in Tuombo. This is a story coming from... Yeah. Lions have been spotted in Ibongo and Machasopora areas of Tuombo.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I know that the area.
Oh, you do?
Machasopora. Oh.
Machisompola. Yeah, Machisompola. Okay. Machisompola.
Yes.
Who lives... What people live here? The Ila or who? Machisompola. Who are the people?
No, the Lenje people.
Oh, the Lenje people.
Yes.
Okay. So the Zambia Wildlife Authority killed one lion, but... stayed in the area to make sure there were no more. The lion is suspected to have come from the Kafue National Park. It is just one of those things I think we want our listeners just to listen to know what is happening in Zambia. One story, we have already talked about it. I don't know if you have a comment on it. The Chinese are going to help Zambia celebrate independence. I thought that was absurd to be wasting meager resources. Knowing that we are going through a very tough time, Machisompola, we don't even know the kind of schools they have in Machisompola, Dr. Musanje. And here we are going to be spending meager resources, the foreign exchange, which we can probably buy books to bring nine Chinese to come and help us celebrate independence. I thought this was not a very, very good move.
Yeah, I think we needed to be economic managers over our destiny, our country. So for the country to hire some Chinese whom they are going to pay millions of dollars just to celebrate for one day, I think that money could have been used to build a clinic or to pay the students in Russia and abroad somewhere. We have heard the students are struggling back in Eastern Europe. Zambia is a rich country, and we have money. It's just what we lack is the proper management of our resources. And the direction. Yes. So we should not be spending money to celebrate independence. Yes, we appreciate the people who threw some stones to get us out of the British colonialism. But at the same time, we should be focused to make Zambia a breadbasket of Southern Africa.
Yes.
Or if
yes.
not the whole of Africa. We have enough land and everything for us to be exporting maize, which is our staple food, to many countries in Africa, and we will be self-reliant. That will bring a lot of revenue into the coffers of Zambia.
Well, like we said, Dr. Musanje, Minister of Education complaining about the results of government schools, and here you are. You can easily find the money to pay the Chinese to come and help you celebrate your own independence. That is where it is a little bit tricky for people to understand or to reconcile the two. How are you disappointed that there are bad results in government schools when there is no money? The teachers are demoralized in some of this much polar area of Chibombo places we are talking about, and later on you want to bring the Chinese to help celebrate independence. Independence which is being abrogated by yourselves. People cannot speak up. People cannot hold public rallies. We are independent from what? Maybe that's why we are calling the Chinese. These are people who are coming from communist rule where protest is not allowed. And therefore it becomes a joke to bring people like this. It becomes a joke. You come and help us to celebrate independence. These are people who do not who does not allow dissent in their own country, and then they are the ones you want to bring in the country to celebrate independence. What kind of a joke is that? I don't understand. If you are bringing people who have known independence to what it means to be free, and then help us so that we can encourage other people to be free, that I will understand. But to bring communist China to a country to help you design independence, that is a biggest joke. Another area, I think, where our politicians are failing us, President Sata and the PF especially. Sad story, Dr. Musanje. This is the police section. The man electrocuted in Kabwe, an identified man, not that story. Let me go to the next story. Man killed by bees. I've heard stories like this, Dr. Musanje. Zemba Mono is actually probably your brother. I don't know if you know him.
Yeah, he has my name too, Mono. What happened to him?
Yeah, Zemba Mono, a 70-year-old man of Namonza village in southern province, has drowned in Namonza stream while running away from a swarm of bees, reported the Daily Mail. Yes.
Wow.
These are some of the stories
those happen. Those things happen only in Africa.
Yes. Well, I have heard stories where the bees will chase you, and sometimes you want to run away from them by diving through, going in the river or stream. But usually, what happens is people when they go under, and then the bees will be waiting for you up here. You come out. And you are not going to stay forever. For some reason, they know you are not going to stay forever there. You come out, they bite you, try to go back there. It is a sad story.
It's a very sad story. We are sorry for the deceased, man's family.
Mm-hmm. The Daily Mail, Dr. Musanje, is reporting police in Namwala have arrested Malaho Mwakonela, SH3, for allegedly raping 87-year-old a woman, reported the Daily Mail. How sick is that?
Yeah, that one I have no mercy. A person who does something like that should go to jail for life.
Yeah, how do you... I don't know if you want to talk about this. I don't know. There's another man also here in the news, Nevas Zimba of Kandola village in Kaflafuta, has committed suicide by jumping in front of a moving truck as relatives were leading him to the police station after he was caught defying his 13-year-old stepdaughter, reported the Daily Mail. They're reporting on that too. Another last one on the police issue. Police have arrested Kofi King of Ghana a pastor of a Miracle Embassy Church in Woodland, Lusaka, for defying and impregnating a 15-year-old girl, reported the Daily Mail. According to the police, the church tried to hush the matter, but the concerned relatives decided to report him. Sad story over there. Okay, and then finally it was sports. We don't know our friends who went to Florida. They will tell us next week how it went, but Zambia lost 4-3 to Japan after we took a lead, and I thought we could have done better than that. We have a few minutes to end Diaspora and Truth. Let me see what. Okay, Mr. Zebron. Zebron, good morning.
Good morning, people. How are you?
Not too bad. Where are you? Are you at the airport?
I'm in Tampa, man. You know what? I don't know. Maybe I'm confused or something. Do you know what happened? I was waiting for 10 o'clock to listen to Nathan. So I'm just coming from, because I was in the lobby talking to James Mwape, you know, telling me good things about Nathan and Mr. Rogers, about whatever. I've been telling my love about James Mwape. At me, I'm waiting for 10 o'clock to listen to Nathan. I'm coming back to my room. I just hear my teacher texting me that that's for, Zambia Block Tech Radio is on. I was like, what did I do now? I've worked like almost an hour now. I'm just confused, man. You know, changing these times and the Eastern Central. It just confused the hell out of me. But yeah,
okay,
we lost, man.
Okay. Yes. Okay, so how did the game go?
The game went very good, man. It was, even my voice right now is messed up. We scored first 2-0. The Mwenyes had a big barbecue party than Zambians. You know what I'm saying? Mwenyes. People were like, oh, I'm from Kitwe. I'm from Livingstone. I'm from what? I was like, what? The Mwenyes put up like, they organized. I'm a Zambians are in the end of that. Guys, Mwenyes had like a big beer, mud, shan, like, oh. They live all over. They came to support Zambia, and I was so happy, man. The Muzungus and everything, we had a big crowd, man. When Zambia scored first goal, it went nuts. Second goal, I'm a voice, the opponent. And then they gave us a penalty for 2-1, and then they equalized. Japan scored again. Zambia equalized, and then come last 3 minutes. So, you know, after Zambia scored, equalized, Japan just had like a 3-4 touch. They scored. But either way, it was nice. We had dinner last time. I'm a Zambian national team. They came for dinner. I had the speech. You know, it was a success, man. It was a very, I'm so happy to be here. I can't even regret the thing.
Roger, when did you last hear the great Mwenye?
It was nice, man. It was nice. Nathan, why did you come? Nathan, why did you come?
You need to come back on the segment. I've got time for you to give a full report.
Well, I will. I'll give you a full report. Full report. I'll do that.
Yeah,
man.
Just briefly for the sake of us who are here. The Mwenyes came from where? They came with the Zambians, or they live here in the United States?
No. Some of them are just like visiting their families or what, but most of them grew up in Zambia. They were playing Zambian music, Mr. Rogers. They put up like a speaker. You know where, like, I'm a Japanese, even very papa. And hey, you guys gonna win the game. You have so much support. Like, yeah. And they were even speaking Nyanja and them. They're not speaking even English. Iwe, Burekuno, Iwe. Iwe from Livingstone. It was like, what? Mwenyes. They had like the Zambian gear, green, Zambian flags. They had the SUVs. I even had to put my phone there and then started playing my Zambian mix. They were like giving us beer, drinks. The Mwenyes, it was good, man. Those guys, we had a good time. Mwenye spent on a tailgating, they spent more than Zambians on a tailgating, because they had like, they were serious. Mr. Rogers, and I mean serious. They were serious. They were like, you know, like they put up like an SUV with a big speaker. Big speaker on top of the SUV. You know, and then an amplifier. I think I should hook up phone and then the child, that was Zambian, I read to this, I say, with free beer, parapin. They come to our country, they make so much money. So we're like, hey, let's enjoy it too as well. So it was nice.
They come to us,
nice.
They make so much. I like that. While we are watching, where was all this noise being made, in the streets or around the stadium?
No, just by the stadium parking lot, just before we went into the stadium.
Okay,
when we went to the stadium, and then there were two sides of the stadium. There's like a Zambian side and the Japanese side. And the Zambian side, it was mixed. Ava Sungu, a lot of Mwenyes in Zambian. They were all in green. I'm a Zambian flag. It was like, that is the number of pictures. I come on Facebook. It was nice. It was nice. It was nice, Monday.
Approximately, when you look at the number who came to support, how many Zambians did you bring here?
Man, it was nice, man. It was a big number. A big number of Zambians came.
A big number.
A little bit bigger than we expected. Mm-hmm. A big number of Zambians came.
Yes.
Yeah, well, there were Zambians from all over. I mean, New York, Alabama, them state. There were Zambians from all over. Michigan, Dallas,
yeah.
New York, what do you think? Dallas, Atlanta, of course, they were there, Kansas City. I mean, Matilda, I mean, I even grabbed the hat from Matilda, and she never saw it again. And people are still asking me, where I need that hat? Like, call Matilda, this hat is now mine from now on. And, she had a very good heart. Matilda is very talented, man. She had a very good heart. She was wearing it. I just grabbed it off her head, and it's mine from now on. If she's there, please don't tell her. But it's just mine from now on.
Yeah. So come at, is it 10 Eastern, which is going to be an hour from now. Zebron is going to be reporting, and the other members of the people who went to see the Zambians, though we lost, according to the report I saw in Lusaka Times, it was a thrilling game filled with goals and filled with excitement. So we'll be waiting for you at 10.
I'm here all day.
At 10 o'clock, and then you guys are going to tell us. I'm sure you are. Are you going to have any meetings today where you're going to
No.
We're going for the beach.
Yeah. We're just going for the beach something at one, and then we'll have like a Zambian DJ party. They'll be playing music in the evening, and then tomorrow people will be leaving. So a lot of people are hanging out today. There's like a beach party. I mean, as we dig, we're going to have like a barbecue by the beach around one, and then around like 9, 10, there's like a DJ from all of New York, most of them from the East Coast, Connecticut and New York. They'll be playing Zambian music, Zambian, clubbing stuff, So it's a good arrangement, man. I like, a lot of Zambians coming together, from all over the place and just like, one cause, it's a good, I'm just so happy. It just makes you feel happy to be a Zambian, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
So that was our show on Diaspora and Truth. Twambo Kapirikisha again. We send a word of condolences to her. The grandma passed on in Zambia yesterday. So our condolences to Twambo. She was not here. And in our next hour, I don't know what Nathan would like to do. I have Dr. Musanje, Dr. Patrick, who just joined us. I've planned Dr. Patrick. I'm not sure if you saw my note I sent to you, but I think it was too late. I intended to do it earlier on in the week. I wanted us to look at the life of Maya Angelou, Dr. Patrick, and what she means to all of us. What our words mean. She describes words as things, she says. But unfortunately, I have to go. And there are only two things I can probably do right now, whether Nathan takes it over or we have a segment we can relearn. Nathan, to you, what is your say? I didn't get the answer from
you. Yes, Roger. I can see Dr. Patrick and Uncle Daniel Chisewe has called in. Dr. Patrick, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. If it would be okay, I would like to read something on behalf and a tribute to Maya Angelou, and then I'll give a brief background to it, and as my contribution to memorializing Dr. Maya Angelou.
That sounds good.
The title of the poem is "Raisins in My Cup." She brought her cup of coffee to the segregationist South. The overt racists drank it and chewed something unfamiliar to them. It was crunchy, and they thought it to be a boll weevil. Their thoughts made them ill. She brought her cup of coffee to the benign neglect North. The covert racists drank it and chewed something unfamiliar to them. It was crunchy, and they thought it to be a roach. Their thoughts made them ill. She brought her cup of coffee to South Africa. The apartheid leaders drank it and chewed something unfamiliar to them. It was crunchy, and they thought it to be a spider. Their thoughts made them ill. They all asked, "What is this you gave me to drink?" She smiled and replied, "It is a gypsy belief that when you place raisins, a rare fruit for them, in the coffee, it is paying high honor to the recipient. What you tasted was my special anointed raisins, Nikki Giovanni, Martin Luther King Jr., John Lewis, Malcolm X, Nelson Mandela, Toni Morrison, Barack Obama, Bayard Rustin, Emily Joy Sikazwi, Oprah Winfrey, that I put in my coffee and shared with you, hoping you would mellow out." That's our tribute to Maya Angelou and her family.
And their family. That's profound and powerful, Dr. Patrick. We'll continue with Dr. Patrick. Let me just tell everybody that we are continuing our discussion. Today we have a little bit of change in our programming and broadcasting due to some changes. Our colleague Twambo Kapilikisha in Germany lost her grandmother, so she is not able to do our show. Our condolences to her from the Zambia Block Talk Radio family. And Roger has to run and take his son for a game, you know, some of these things. But we'll continue our discussion. We are eulogizing and sort of reflecting and memorizing and trying to reflect on the great Maya Angelou who died the past few days. What we'll do in our next segment, for those, we are going to have a brief 10-20 minutes report from Zebron, Daniel Chisewe, Titus, everybody in Tampa about what is going on there with the Zambia national team. And then we'll talk to Anita, who is a Zambian model, who's going to represent Zambia at the Miss USA Africa 2014. Dr. Patrick, going back to Maya Angelou, an icon.
Yes.
An image of tenacity, and that if you stick to what you believe and what you stand for, eventually you emerge to set a very great example through generations. I mean, tell us about yourself in relation to her growing up as a young African-American and reflecting on Maya Angelou's life and the things that she went through. I mean, reading, I was looking at a few things in her life, and I was like, wow, this was another woman who made a contribution to the civil rights movement, just humanity, just the rights of a human being, you know. That's what the civil rights movement was about, isn't it?
Yes, yes. She's an internationalist, and we don't realize, the general community, the international community, don't realize how much of an internationalist she was until her passing away. Growing up, I knew of Maya Angelou as a poet and a performer and a dancer. We looked at her as the mother of poetry. We looked at her not as an icon, but as somebody that we could bring to the house and sit around the table and break bread and be lectured to in a motherly sense.
Yes.
We didn't realize the breadth and the broadness of her meaning to life and to all of us until, again, as I mentioned earlier, until her passing. She lived abroad. She was in Ghana. She lived in Ghana.
Oh, really?
Yes, she lived in Ghana, and her return to the United States was based basically on her working with Malcolm X.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, by the time she arrived in the United States to work with Malcolm X, he passed away. She was also a dancer and performer, in which she traveled Europe and she played in the play Porgy and Bess. And it was at that time when she was traveling in Europe, she met with gypsies, and the gypsies were the ones that provided her raisins in her coffee.
Uh-huh.
And that's based on what I wrote, the poem about her. And when Maya took it and she bit down on it and it was crunchy, and she made herself ill because she didn't know what was in this coffee, and whereupon she asked the gypsies what they put in the coffee, and they, of course, said it was raisins, and it was in an honor to her. So based on that story, I wrote my poem. Now, within the poem, you may note that I added Emily Joyce Akeswe.
Yes.
I'm not sure if you or the listening audience know Emily Joy, but Emily Joy was the one of the presidents of Women for Change in Zambia. And she may still be the president, but she was originally the president. And I invited Emily Joy to one of the Blacks in Government conferences that was held in Boston 3 years past.
Uh-huh.
And when Emily came, she presented this beautiful Zambian bedspread. And she presented it to, unknown to us, she just presented it to two individuals.
Wow.
The first one she presented to Michelle Obama.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one was to Maya Angelou.
Mm.
And that's why I included her name. And that at that point, we all realized how international Maya Angelou was. So the connection and the intertwining and the lecturing and the entreatments as well as the encouragements that Maya has provided to all of us is welcome and will be remembered. As you know, she was the first female to read poetry and read at the inauguration of Bill Clinton.
I remember that. Here's the question, Dr. Patrick. What took her to Ghana? In what circumstances did she move to Ghana? What made her go to Ghana?
She was thinking in terms of W.E.B. Du Bois. You know, he is married. I mean, he is not married, but he is presently buried in Ghana. The gravesite of W.E.B. Du Bois is in Ghana. Yes, and she was. She's greatly influenced by Ghana, based on Kwame Nkrumah.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of pan-Africanist movement that threads throughout Ghana. So that's just few of the reasons why she moved to Ghana and she lived in Ghana. A lot of her, a lot of U.S. writers and news reporters had also migrated and lived in Ghana. So that's one of the reasons. Some of the
Excellent.
Reasons.
Interesting writing. So she comes back with a view of trying to work or support and do some things with Malcolm X, and is assassinated or executed, and what happened after that?
Yes, at that time when she returned, she wanted to work with Malcolm X as a Pan-Africanist and also as an individual that wanted to bring equity to African Americans in the United States. And this was the direction that Malcolm X was taking after his departure from the Nation of Islam and his creation of a new organization.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, he was assassinated. And then from that point on, Maya began and continued to work with international leaders as well as national leaders. Martin Luther King is one individual that she began to work with.
Mm-hmm.
She began to work with the unions, one individual, leading individual, and we talked about him on the Zambia Blog Talk Radio in the past, which is Bayard Rustin. She worked with him. She worked with congressman now, but he wasn't a congressman at that time, with John Lewis. Everybody will remember Congressman John Lewis at the Pettus Bridge. He worked with many, many African-American poets and poetress. Two individuals that will come to many of our minds is three that have come to my mind, and I put two in my poem, Nikki Giovanni and
mm-hmm.
Toni Morrison. There's another poetress that she worked with, which is Sonia Sanchez. There's Ed Bullins. So there's a great deal of individuals and leaders throughout the arts community, as well as the political community, as well as the social community, as well as the economic community. And she brought these individuals together to mold into the fabric of black consciousness, not only to the African-American community and the global African community, but also to the Caucasian community, Asian community, the brown community, all weaving and saying that we are all connected. So that's Maya. As you know, her fame and her united concept was brought to the attention of President Bill Clinton, and he in turn also recognized Maya Angelou by inviting her to give or to present her poem.
Dr. Patrick, before we talk about the books that she has written, and I want to ask you which one of those you have read, that occasion of her reading a poem on Bill Clinton's inauguration, I think that was the first time something like that was being done, isn't it? That was a milestone.
Yes, it is. Yes, it was the first time. And you could see, if you've seen some of the clips or if you have an opportunity to Google the clips, you'll see that you'll see and you'll hear her reading. And you see how fortunate and proud that Bill Clinton was there to listen to this laureate, poet laureate. So that was very, very important. And, of course, one thing leads into another. That's one of the reasons amongst many why Maya Angelou became the mentor of Oprah Winfrey.
Uh-huh.
And Oprah Winfrey and Michelle Obama, as well as Bill Clinton, are down here in Wake Forest, not Wake Forest, but in Winston-Salem, to pay tribute to Maya Angelou on this day.
Mm. You're listening to Zambia Block Talk Radio. This is a special presentation. We're simply reflecting on or eulogizing the life of the great Maya Angelou with Dr. Patrick Wilson. On top of the hour, our friends in Tampa, Florida will be joining us to give a preview of their experiences that they've had there yesterday after the Zambia national team and Japan game, and we'll be crossing over there. There are a few people here who have called in. Let me ask Dr. Munsanje. Dr. Munsanje, good morning again.
Good morning, Nathan.
You have heard what Dr. Patrick is giving us. We're reflecting on Maya Angelou's life. I don't know what your thoughts are. There will be a private ceremony today to celebrate her life and to put her to rest. What are your thoughts?
I thought that she was a great inspiration for all people, but specifically for African Americans. She gave the leadership that we require from many of us to give guidance to the struggle.
Yes.
The struggle in the 60s, and then after that she did not just stop over there. She extended her work to talk about what African Americans should be doing in education to empower themselves. She actually she empowered them by her messages that you are somebody. You know, I remember some of the words that she uses. That she gave them that inspiration to move on, and a lot of them have achieved that, which is, for me, it is a very, very good thing.
Oh, excellent. Have you read any of your books, her books, Dr. Munsanje?
When I was in the college, I read some of their books, but right now I don't remember which books, because it was a requirement to read her books.
Okay. Well, can you remember which one you read?
No, that has been many years ago.
I know you left school, I don't know how many centuries ago. Dr. Patrick, which books of Maya Angelou have you read?
The first book that I read, and amongst the many poems that I read, the first one is most likely the first book that everyone read about her and remember her, and that's I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings.
Yes. And what is it about?
It's about a young child growing up and being dragged out of her innocence. She was raped by her uncle, and from that point on, and she shared this information with her brother, and after she told her brother what happened to her, I believe within a week's time, the uncle was found dead.
Oh.
So, and after that point, she refused to talk for, I believe, the next 5 years. But as her development came in, and she began to write, and she began to experience that she was not the reason for
the death
of her uncle,
yeah.
And she was not the reason for her being raped. She began to express these sentiments in her evolution into the grown-up child she became and the woman she became. So she was trapped by her environment and her circumstances, and in her entrapment, this made her feel that she was caged. But
do we know what caused the death of her uncle?
Well, they never knew. No one ever said. He just turned up dead.
Mm.
Now, some people are saying that perhaps it was her brother that was behind his death.
His death.
But something happened, and she felt, Maya Angelou felt that when she told her brother about her being raped by her uncle, maybe that was the cause of him turning up dead. And she was traumatized by that.
Hmm.
But her that emotion made her caged. She was entrapped by her circumstances. However, even though being entrapped and encaged, it's a reflection or it's a microcosm of what African Americans and Africans feel under various circumstances, whether it's in South Africa, whether it's in the South, whether it's in the North in certain areas. We feel encaged or we feel entrapped by circumstances, and circumstances would be racism, it could be apartheid, it could be discrimination. However, even in our entrapment, even though we're in the cage, we still can find reasons to sing.
Before I ask Zebron about his thoughts on Maya Angelou, which other books as among those she wrote have you read? And what are they about?
Is that for me?
No, that's Dr. Patrick. I'll come to you, Zebron, after Dr. Patrick.
Oh,
after
yes. That's the book that I was talking about. I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was saying which other books has she written, and how many of them have you read, and what are they about?
Oh, let's see. Give me a few minutes to think about that, and then I'll come back to you. But the most prevalent, predominant book is I Know Why the Caged Bird
Sings.
Yes,
I know. That one is Binolo. If you Google Maya Angelou, that's the one that is coming up.
Yes.
Zebron, I know you're fired up in Tampa, and we're talking about Maya Angelou here.
Yes.
Give me your thoughts and reflections about, just your perception about her, and how you've seen her work sort of influence the community, I believe, of the black people worldwide.
Yeah. I never really used to read poet that much and stuff like that, but I did a little article about Maya Angelou. And after I did that, I came to realize that this woman was unique, you know. She was like no other black woman, to be specific. This is a woman that... actually was born and raised near where I live. She was born in St. Louis, but she was raised around St. Louis and the Arkansas area. And then she started really experiencing the actual racism around the age of 7. You know, she was young by then. And she was seeing the brutality of racism and stuff like that. And, she went to school. She had to drop out at the age of 14. And she had a firstborn. She had her first baby at the age of 16, you know what I'm saying? And then she was a single mother, you know. She was a single mother, so she had to work, provide for her baby, and then still did what she had to do. You know, she became like the first cable conductor, somewhere in San Francisco.
Yeah,
yeah, so she's a black woman that, you know, she could be an example to so many black women around who give excuses. No, I can't do this because I'm a single mother. I can't do this as a single mother. If you reflect at this woman's life, she did so much with very little that she had in a time where racism, living and everything was so hard to do, but she did it beyond her expectations, you know what I'm saying? This is a woman that, you know, yeah, she did that. We know that she moved to Cairo, Egypt first, before she moved to Ghana. You know, when she moved to Ghana, she didn't really just stay in Ghana. We know that Maya Angelou actually, she did like weekly articles at the Arab Observer right in Ghana. And then she also taught she also taught at the University of Ghana School of Music and Drama, you know. And then she also wrote in like African Review and then the Ghanaian Times. So she was so involved, you know. After she left Ghana, actually, as Dr. Patrick said, when she came to the United States of America, she just started working with Malcolm X, and then he was assassinated, you know. And then now, that's when Martin Luther, Martin Luther started coming in to work with her, things like that. And then on her birthday, Martin Luther was assassinated right on her birthday. You know what I'm saying? And then we know that after that, she stopped celebrating her birthday, and on each birthday, she was just sending flowers to Martin Luther King's widow until, like, for more than 30 years, she was just sending flowers on her birthday until their widow died, you know. That's why we know that. I think it should be like 2008 or something. Oprah Winfrey had a big birthday party for her because she never really did most of her celebration. So Oprah Winfrey decided to take out
that birthday was about.
Yeah, yeah. So she had a big 70th birthday. They went like for a week's cruise somewhere, you know what I'm saying? So she went through so much, and, you know, she came back. She went on doing her work. She has more than 50 honorary degrees. She has 3 Grammy Awards. So she's more like one of the most successful person either, you know, in our pretty much like black community. This lady is so much accomplished, and, you know, she's much bigger than we look at her. Being a woman, being a woman of color, in the times that were tough, she surpassed everything to be where she was. And to me, it's just like so much, you know.
Zebron, you said you wrote something about, was it an article, a poem?
It was just like a very short article that I did a while ago about Maya Angelou. And, you know, I just did a little bit of research and everything. It was just like a very short presentation, you know. But, you know, from there, you know, that's when I was just really blessed because, you know, after that I realized that, you know, her poems and, you know, and, you know, her fight for, you know, civil rights helped so many black women, you know, this country in their teaching and in the political fields and stuff like that. So despite what she was going through, she really fought. She was persistent, you know what I'm saying? She kept moving forward, you know. There are so many things where she could have stumbled and said, I can't do this anymore. I can't. You know what I'm saying? This is not what I can do. But she never gave up. She had she had a vision way ahead. You know, she just never gave up. She kept on going like that. You know, being raped at, you know, at that age. There's some rumors that the person that raped her is her mom's boyfriend. You know, some articles. Her mom's boyfriend is the one that raped her. Yeah, and then her uncles and everything actually ended up killing her. You know what I'm saying? And then she was so tormented for a very long time. She was so tormented, like her mental, she could have gone mad and everything. That's when Dr. Patrick said, she stopped speaking for a while because she was just so confused of what things were going on. She saw racism here. She's being raped. She's trying to do this. They're just like stumbling blocks all over her life, but she just kept on moving. She kept on moving. And you know what I'm saying? So to me, you know, this woman is just, she's so unique. She's unbelievable. You know what I'm saying? She's just not an ordinary woman. Maya Angelou was a woman of substance.
Yeah. Because even when you go to our website, I like what they write on top there. It says Global Renaissance Woman. That's a very profound statement right there. Now, Zebron, before I go back to Dr. Patrick, this piece you wrote about her, was it a school project or it was just something you did out of interest?
It was like because I used to do public speaking, so I did like a short presentation. Yeah, so we used to do like one of my public speaking classes that I took, I did like a short presentation about her, and then I used a little bit of PowerPoint to get a few pictures and stuff like that, and you know, it was just like a very short presentation, like maybe a 15-minute presentation, you know. I could have had the choice to write about Africa, but I could have written about Martin Luther King or Malcolm X, but I just wanted to, you know, just like write something that I didn't really know about, like lady, you know, a woman of black color. So I, you know, I had a few bits, you know, I did a little bit of study about her, and I just learned a lot, and it became a little bit more interesting, you know. She went to Africa, you know, she contributed what she could in Africa. I know a lot of African people, African Americans would like, you know, they don't really know much about Africa, but she actually lived there. She lived in Cairo, Egypt. So she lived the way of, you know, Africans, the Arab way, and then from there.
That's very interesting, you know. It's really amazing that she lives among the Arab Africans, and then she goes and lives among the West Africans in Ghana.
Exactly. So she was very exposed to the life outside America. So she knew what life was in the Arab America, in the Black America. She taught there. She contributed what she could with her knowledge to the African continent. She came back here. She kept moving. She worked with Malcolm X. He was assassinated. That's when she was so devastated again. And then, you know, so it was, there were so many stumbling blocks in her life, but she kept on moving. She just kept on moving. Like, this woman had a heart. And then there was a time that when she was doing an interview, she says even when she had a boyfriend, her boyfriend beat her up so bad. Beat her up, like, so bad, you know. So, but she still kept on moving. She left him, she kept on moving, you know. So this woman had a heart. She had a heart. Yeah. She had a heart.
That's right. Yeah, excellent. Life of Maya Angelou, a special memorial service will be held today, I believe. Is this in our home state, Dr. Patrick? Is it North or South Carolina?
Yeah, it's in Winston-Salem. She taught at Wake Forest University.
Can you imagine Maya Angelou, Zebron as your professor?
Oh, my God. I'll be getting A's every day. I'll be like, getting autographs.
I would just like to sit there.
It would be difficult because Maya is a true instructor, which means that she will make you work.
Exactly.
Sonia Sanchez was one of my professors way back when. And she and all poetress, all laureate poets,
yes,
are taskmasters. They want you to think, and they want you to look into and behind the veneer of what you believe it to be.
Mm-hmm,
and Brother
Zebron
stated that Maya Angelou traveled to Egypt. And basically, one of the reasons why she was in Egypt was to look at the historical truisms of Egypt. She was also a student of Dr. Ben. Many of the African American community knows Dr. Ben Jacannon, and Dr. Ben was an Africanist. He was one of the premier educators for African Americans about Africa and the history of Africa and the outspring of African history that led to culture that sprouted out in Europe. And one of his major trips is he would take African Americans to Egypt. And he would explain and discuss the Africanism and the blackness of Egypt. And he would talk about Tutmosis, and he would talk about Amenhotep, and he would bring into reality that it was the true African that brought the richness to Egypt. So when Maya Angelou traveled to Egypt, she was going there to look at the richness of the Africanness, the true Africanness, as opposed to when the Greeks and the Romans arrived in Africa and everyone think that it was the Greeks and the Romans. Right. So that's what Maya was there for, to learn the culture, the true culture. If anyone were to go to Egypt now and they would travel to around the Aswan Dam area and further down, you would see Africans, black Egyptians, look at you and call you my Nubian brother. And they are the true Egyptians, blackface true Egyptians, and they are called the Nubians. So that's who Maya was actually going down to enrich herself, her cultural background. And it's a progression. So from Egypt, she goes to Ghana, and that's a continuation of the richness of our Africanness there.
Excellent. Zeb, in your research, what other stuff did you find out you can share with us?
You know, for me, you know, what much interested me was I know she did a lot of you know, like traveling and everything, but one thing that really interested me was her fight for civil rights, you know, her fight for women, you know what I'm saying, and her respect she earned from Bill Clinton all the way up to Barack Obama, you know what I'm saying? I know why the caged bird sings, you know, it's made history, you know. I think it's like, David Patrick will help me, it's like one of the first African-American women to sell that non-fiction, just like the best seller. One of the best sellers of an African American. So, you know, I think she also wrote other poets and stuff like that. But just her work to enhance the African community, African American community. You know, just let me just say like the black community in general, because she did influenced people, either African Americans or Africans.
Yeah.
I'm saying.
Right.
So.
Right.
Yeah. Just her work to help. Because for me, one thing I discovered after writing that is that this is the woman what saw life was, and she was trying to tell us that there's much more to life than what you see ahead. You know what I'm saying? You can do it. You can do it. That's much like what she was telling us in her actions, not in her words. You know, some people are good speakers. One thing I discovered is that some people are good speakers. They'll tell you all kinds of encouragement, and then they'll tell you, oh, you can do this, you can do this. You'll be like, oh, clapping, yeah, you can do this, yes, you can do this, you can do this. You'll be like, oh, clapping, yes. And then once they leave that pulpit, they go do something different. Maya Angelou was opposite. She was not good at speaking, but she was good at doing. And then if we cannot learn from that, you know what I'm saying? She was good at doing something. She will not tell you what to do, but just watch her do what she is doing. You can learn so much. You can tell that, you know, I'm not going to tell you how things is done, but just see how I do it, and you can learn so much. You know what I'm saying? And then if I really reflect on her life, especially in the 60s, you know what I'm saying, when racism was so brutal, you know what I'm saying, when she started experiencing racism where she would see people, black people getting beat up, you know what I'm saying, just because of being black, you know what I'm saying? You know, and then just being black was something that is very hard. And then during that time, women's rights were not that respected. White or black, women's rights were not that respected. So she had a double obstacle. You know, she was black and she was a woman. You know what I'm saying? Mm. She was black and she was a woman. But she ended up achieving everything she wanted to achieve and more. You know, so for me, it tells you that if this woman did it, then we have no excuse to give for our failures. You know what I'm saying? If this woman did it, we have no excuse to give for our failures. You know, this woman went through so much. She ended up, you know, she dropped off her in school to do arts. You know, she went back to school. She ended up being a professor. You know, she did everything you could expect, and she ended up contributing what she learned to the community. You know, she was involved in doing everything that the community wanted her to do. You know what I'm saying? And she succeeded. You know, she has a very rich CV to prove it. I mean, we can learn so much from that woman did and not what she said. You know what I'm saying? We can learn so much from what she did and not what she said. Because there are some people that are good speakers, but not good doers, you know. But this one actually did it, you know.
Mere speech, mere talk, eh?
Yeah, she did it. She did it. She did not so tell you how to do it, and she couldn't do it. No, she actually did it. So we can do it. Because everyone, when someone is telling us, they're telling us to do, not to speak. When a position stands there, they're telling us, yeah, we can do it. They're not telling you that you can go and talk nice to the community. No, they're telling you, no, we can go and do good things to the community, and you are clapping because you want good things to be done. But here's a woman who is doing good things to the community. She did everything, and then we have not given her as much recognition as she's had because she's a doer. She did it. You know what I'm saying? Mm. So that's
I want
like
you to respond to this, Zebron, and Dr. Patrick, you can respond to it too when Zebron is done. As diaspora residents, obviously we can look at Maya Angelou's time in Africa as a time of her being a diasporan. Don't you think so?
Oh, yes. Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. And what Zebron so eloquently shared with all of us just think of the trials and tribulations that Maya Angelou went through.
Mm.
And just think of those trials and tribulations are cages that keep her as well as all of us in. And just, it would be easy to just pull yourself into a shell and, mm-hmm. and be angry and bitter and not do anything. But it's far stronger to begin to sing. And another way of singing is to shout out, is to express yourself, is to free yourself. Even though you're entrapped in this cocoon, you're singing. And that's the essence of I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings. She knows, even though you've been pounced upon and put down and discriminated against and had racists hang you and hang your parents and shoot you and put water hoses, fire hoses on you, you're mm-hmm. still singing. You're still resilient. You're still bouncing back. And that's what Maya is telling all of us. She says, I know why we're doing it, because we are people of color. We're strong. We come from ancestors of kings and queens, and we're still standing. That's why we continue to sing. And, and just fold it all into one great woman that is our voice. She is speaking for us, and she is saying, "Don't you see what happened to me? If this happened to me, and look what I've become, you can become even greater."
That's powerful, profound. There. This is Under Block Talk Radio, a special feature. We are eulogizing the life of Maya Angelou, a global renaissance woman. And, wow, interesting stuff that you can look at, MayaAngelou.com, MayaAngelou.com. And a lot of things featured there, young African-Americans and African people who have succeeded in media, business, the movie industry. And you can look at a lot of wonderful stuff there. What are our lessons? I mean, Zebron, I'll start with you. What are our lessons from here? Before we continue, let me say good morning, Uncle Daniel.
Listen, great job at Maya Angelou. How are you?
Doing okay, sir. You recovering from the excitement from last night?
I don't know if you can hear my voice a little bit. I was shouting and I was yelling. I mean, it was a lot of fun, yes.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in about 15 minutes' time on top of the hour. I want to hear from you guys that experience that you had. Zabu, what are our lessons for Maya's life? You've already alluded to it, but I want you to zero in that point of somebody who went through so much. I like it when you use that expression. She didn't talk for 5 years because of that horrific experience. What are our lessons from a woman like this?
My lesson for a woman like this is that, for me, I'll just say, in the black community of Jen, whether African-Americans or Africans, just people here either in diaspora or Africa, my lesson from this woman is that there's so much stumbling blocks right now. Okay, there's some stumbling blocks right now, and then we've been keeping giving reasons of, we keep giving reasons like, oh, we could have done this, but you know, it could be like racism, you know, maybe the system is not whatever. We could have done this, but the system is not, you know what I'm saying, whatever. But I know from now we cannot compare the system of nowadays, the system, the way it was in the 60s. We all at least can agree that so much stuff has improved. I mean, racism is not over. There's still racism, but you cannot compare today's racism with way back racism. Because today, if you just say an N-word and you're a white man, you are finished. You know what I'm saying? Way back, a white man could whip a black man and still walk away with that. So when we know that there's so much stuff that has improved, but racism is not, it's not over. But as a black community, you know, to be specific, you know, we can learn so much from this woman and stop giving excuses and try, do, and accomplish in our lives. We can learn so much. Most of the things that they are in our lives. We can try to change our lives despite the current situation we are in. So our lesson, like, we should stop giving excuses. Okay, I know there's so much life harder now. We have, like, you know, our, you know, Caucasian brothers who are at least 100 years or so ahead of us. But we can see that. We should put that mindset behind us and just say, oh, let's say we are even. Let's, you know, keep going to school, whatever we have. You have a baby. Let's take care of that responsibility. Also, something you have, you do this. Let's not neglect our responsibility. Let's keep going. Let's not stop what we are doing and start giving excuses. But we have to keep going. We have to put in our best. This woman did her best, and she succeeded. So let's put in our best in whatever situations we have, and we can do it.
Dr. Patrick, can anybody say it better than that? We have no excuse. Dr. Patrick?
Yes,
okay.
Not at all. Not at all. That is it to the point. That is it to the point.
I mean, we have no excuse, really.
No.
I mean, like, I keep telling people, Zebron and everybody listening out there, I mean, especially, like, in this country and all over the world, I mean, colleges are around every corner. What excuse do you have?
That's right. This is for our listening audience, for Maya, of course, and for Twombo. I understand. I never knew what my parents meant when they told me our loved ones never die until they both and my grandmother passed away. What they meant was they will eternally remain in your mind and heart. When you talk to siblings, relatives, friends, anyone about the time when, yes, do you remember when mom used to, oh my goodness, you're just like my mom. Oh my goodness, I'm acting like my mom. Every time we do that, our parents live again. So, in your sadness, think about the times when your mom made you smile, laugh, and yes, even worked your nerves, and she will live again. Say, hi, Mom, I know you're there. Wink and giggle.
That's powerful, Dr. Patrick.
Thank you. That's to our moms and to our dads.
That's right. And you see, it's interesting because of what you say, talking about our friend, our dear friend, sister, colleague, Twombo. I mean, a grandmother is a special person. She's very special. And I sent her a message. I said, Twombo, on the passing of grandma, may you find comfort and strength in reflecting on the wonderful time the Lord allowed you and the family to share with her, you know? I mean, those memories should be our strength. Those memories should be our strength. And I mean, amazing. It's, life is just a mystery. And the way when we learn to look at it as a gift from God and not really like an entitlement, it really helps us a lot. And
That's right.
Yeah.
To you, Nathan, as well.
Exactly. I mean, it's still fresh. I mean, how many? It's like what, 4 or 5 months? It's still fresh. At times, I sit down and I get lost, just daydreaming about mom. You know,
That's right.
Yeah. At times, go ahead.
Her spirit soars. It is hard to speak to you when my voice trembles. It is hard to see you when my eyes are watering. It is hard to write the remembrance as my hand was shaking. It is hard to stand here before you because my heart is breaking. But stand before you, I must, because of Mom. Showed me how easy it is to speak to power, how easy it is to see clearly and perceptively, how easy it is to write to power, how easy it is to have a bigger heart than those who have none. Mm-hmm. I was blind, but she made me see. Your flesh lies here, but your spirit soars. In my mind's eye, will always see you in graceful flight.
Amazing. It's amazing. I think we need to, I would encourage everybody, like we are saying, to go to MayaAngelou.com page. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff to read there. It's amazing at times when you take for granted some of the people that God has blessed us with, and who we have all these resources. And thank God for the internet, you know.
Yes, and just let me share with you that the poems I've just read to you,
mm-hmm.
I wrote those.
I can see Miss Angelou's influence right there.
Yes.
and inspiration. Zabu, have you written any poems yourself?
No, I was actually never good at poems, and
uh-huh.
To be honest, I even hated poems, you know what I'm saying? So, because poems is not really my field. I mean, I was, when I went to Kablonga Boys, I was
yes.
put into school of, I had an option to take accounts on literature. I ended up switching
yeah.
from literature to agricultural science. And everyone was like, yeah, let's do literature, whatever, and you're going to be writing all kinds of English. So I was never really, like, I never mind writing English, but I didn't want to go so deep into English and poems and literature and stuff like that, because it wasn't really what I really wanted to do. So, but so poems
gift.
And stuff.
It's a gift. Uncle yeah. Daniel, are you into poems?
Not Vanessa, but I know about Dr. Maya Angelou.
Yes.
But I'm not into poems, no.
Okay.
But Daniel, where are you? We should meet. I'm also in Tampa.
No, right now I'm in South Carolina. I left after March.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Daniel has decided to take a vacation and on tour. We shall be talking to this gentleman in a few minutes from now just to get a report on what is going on down Tampa there. Still a lot of activities and events going on. We shall catch up on what happened in the Zambia-Japan match. Even if they lost, I'm told the atmosphere was electric and intense right there. We're looking forward to that discussion. And also coming up, I'll be talking to Anita Ismail. She's a model who is going to be participating in the Miss Africa USA 2014, which will be taking place in Maryland in August this year. Gentlemen, let's conclude this discussion. I mean, what an honor for us on Zanda Block Talk Radio to utilize, I mean, a powerful, an icon, a woman, I like what the website says, like I'm saying. It says Global Renaissance Woman. Wow. What do you
yes.
think that means? What does that mean, Zebron? Global Renaissance Woman.
To me, it symbolizes like she's her work.
Mm.
She's the kind of woman that... She has a global symbol, you know what I'm saying? Like, her influence, you know, is, how do I put it? Like, she's a woman that has, like, a global influence in whatever she
mm-hmm.
did, you know, and, you know, and whatever she did is, like, it's like, extraordinary, you know what I'm saying? It's of high quality, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Her
yes.
work is of high quality. You know what I'm saying? And it's recognized worldwide. It's not like any other ordinary work. You know, she did, you know. So it's more like a global symbol of high-quality work, so to speak, so to put it. I don't know if Dr. Patrick helped me with that, but... yeah.
Dr. Patrick, your thoughts on Global Renaissance Woman?
Yes. I wrote a poem, and the name of the poem is, the title of the poem is Back Again. And I wrote this in April 27th in 2007. And this poem, looking at it again, it encapsulizes what we've been talking about. It encapsulizes why a caged bird would sing. It encapsulizes racism and apartheid, and it also encapsulizes the entitled and richness of this woman. And it encapsulizes what we've been talking about. The title again is Back Again. It's easy to lay down after you've fallen down and just stay down, but being down will allow all to run you down. But frown, refuse to be ground down. Pick yourself up, make a loud sound that let everyone know you're back around. 2 feet on the ground and wearing again your royal crown.
Just add a little bit, you know what I'm saying? You know, this is a woman, I didn't make this point, this is a woman that was so much successful, not only in one field, but in multiple fields.
Yes,
you
that's
know
right.
You know, in multiple fields, and she was success in both of them. So it's also one thing that makes her so unique, you know what I'm saying? It makes
that's right.
Makes her so unique, because she didn't really concentrate like, you know, in, she was, as much as she's known for her art, she was also into sciences, you know what I'm saying? So, so, you know, just like a few other people, like, oh, me, I'm an architecture, I'm also an accountant, you know, it's very hard because people want to get into one career, they want to concentrate into that so they can be higher, but she was like, you know, she was successful in more than one field, so to speak, so.
That's right. Gentlemen, thank you for your thoughts. My goodness, Dr. Patrick Zebron, what a wealth of information and experiences that you have shared. And coming up in a few minutes, let's all call back in. We'll drop you momentarily as we conclude, as we eulogized the life of the legend and great Maya Angelou, should be put to rest today in a private ceremony. We'll be joining Zebron, Daniel, a few others will be calling in from Tampa to give us a report of what's going on in Tampa. And then we'll talk to Anita Ishmael, who is a model and will be participating, representing Zambia in the Miss Africa USA in August.
China or even Russia or any totalitarian country. Maybe I could understand some of these illegal injunctions. Maybe I could understand the denial of certain basic First Amendment privileges because they haven't committed themselves to that over that. But somewhere I read of the freedom of assembly. Somewhere I read of the freedom of speech. Somewhere I read of the freedom of press. Somewhere I read that the greatness of America is the right to protest far right. A world of hold that's turn us around. We aren't going to let any injunction turn us around.